views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call. Take the leap with Rudy Racine as you listen to the Higher Learners Career and Leadership Series. This show targets anyone looking to advance their careers and further develop their leadership skills. Rudy Racine is a certified coach, entrepreneur, motivational speaker, and the founder CEO of Higher Learners. In this show, Rudy will introduce listeners to professionals and executives in a variety of industries while discussing the challenges that tend to stand in the way of career growth and advancement. Learn how to craft your personal definition of success with the right mix of focus and motivation. Higher Learners is putting minds to work.
What's up, everyone? I'm Rudy Racine, and you're listening to the Higher Learners podcast on Transformation Talk Radio. Each first and third Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 p.m. Pacific, we discuss topics to help you sharpen your skills to get you to the next level in your career. Stay with us for the next hour as we are discussing developing essential leadership traits. Our guest for this show is Dr. Marcus Broadhead. Dr. Marcus Broadhead is a lifelong educator who's been working in the public school system since 1999. He is the co-founder of several mentorship programs which focus on the development of at-risk males. Over the past 7 years, he's served in educational leadership and is currently the principal of Bennett's Mill Middle School in Fayetteville, Georgia. Welcome, Dr. Broadhead.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. So, Dr. Broadhead, as I mentioned, we are going to be talking a little bit about developing essential leadership traits. And I know you have your doctorate in educational leadership, so I figured you'd be the best person to kind of talk about this. Now, can you tell us a little bit about what you do now?
What I currently do, I serve as a principal of Bennett's Mill Middle School, this is my third year at Bennett's Mill Middle School currently.
Excellent. So what made you get into education?
Well, initially, it's funny because education in and of itself was something that I kind of fell into, and it was more so a last-ditch effort to try to figure out what I wanted to do with myself. It was something that I decided to do senior in high school, and a friend of mine was going into education, so I just figured I'd follow along and see how that worked itself out. And ultimately, what happened was I got a great opportunity to get a scholarship, and I did pursue that opportunity and got a great scholarship, which allowed me to go into Haas University, which allowed me to pursue a great field in education, and then ultimately landed me a position in education. And initially, why I wanted to be an educator had a lot to do with what I believe my education lacked. So I kind of went into it with a chip on my shoulder about what I felt that students needed that we weren't receiving. So initially, I went into it to try to fill a gap and to begin to work with students in a position that I believe that was squandered, so to speak, by the educators that I came in contact with. I felt like I just wanted to be able to care for students more than I felt like I was cared for, and guide students more than I felt that I was guided, which was pretty much my driving force initially going into education.
Excellent. So now it sounds like you fell into education, and it's similar to what many listeners kind of do with their careers. At what point did you realize, though, that this was the career that you wanted to grow in?
Well, I would say that I was always passionate about helping students. I was always passionate about helping people. And when I got an opportunity to student teach, it was my first real test. And I think that what it's supposed to be doing, what you're supposed to be doing, because you're in front of kids. It's not theory. It's practice. You're dealing with the livelihood of children's education. It's not something to play with. So you're in front of students. And at the time, I was in secondary education in English. So I taught high school English. So I'm here with these teenagers and I'm working with these students and I'm listening to them. I'm working with them. And it just felt right. I felt as though the things that I had to offer them were being reciprocated because I was learning from them, and they were teaching me a great deal about who I was. And I felt like at the same time, there were things that I started to notice in education very early, even as a student teacher, that I felt like I still wanted to contribute in a different way to be able to help and support students. So it was really early. It was during my student teaching experience. And it was during those moments that allowed me to say to myself, well, I think this feels right. It's something that I'm comfortable doing. It's exactly what I hoped it would be. And ultimately, I feel like I'm doing something for community. I'm doing something for students. And I felt like I was being appreciative and being appreciated at the same time. So it just felt right then.
Got it. So it sounds like you, while you were teaching and when you were student teaching, you just got that feeling like you were giving back and you were making a contribution to your community. So that I feel like a lot of teachers and also professionals in general often find something that they're passionate about in their careers. And there are some that decide that they want to grow into leadership roles. And there are some that decide that they're comfortable with where they're at. Right. So obviously you are a principal at a middle school now. So I'm assuming at some point in your career, you decided you wanted to grow into a leadership role. What was it that made you say, you know what, I don't want to be a teacher anymore. I want to be a leader within the school system.
Well, there are a couple of things. I believed initially when I was teaching, because as a high school teacher or English teacher, most cases, you're kind of isolated. So you only get to see teachers in passing. You don't really get to see or understand what's really happening beyond your classroom or beyond your hall. So your interactions are primarily with students, and the things that you're able to do for them and do with them is pretty much to some degree in a silo, depending on what school system you're in or what schools I've experienced. And so in talking with students and talking about their experiences and working with them, as an English teacher, I'm fortunate enough to get more information out of them just in general because of the nature of what we do and how we discuss literature. It relates back to their lives. So we often get to talk about quite a few things. And in those conversations, they talk about the different things that are currently happening either at the school or in their community. And at some times, quite often, I felt like I was limited. I felt as though for some reason or another, as a teacher, I felt limited to really provide the type of support I wanted to provide for them. So, and realizing that I kind of was bound by the content, I decided that I would branch out to do something more socially focused and do something more community-based. So that's what pushed me to create a mentorship program, which got me a more a global perspective of what's going on at the school. So I wasn't just interacting with the students in my classes anymore. I was interacting with the students at large. And so communicating with more students, more young males, it helped me get a better, an even bigger perspective of what was happening in the school community. And I still felt like I was pigeonholed in my role. And also, just as far as an education standpoint, there were things that students were saying, sharing with me about other teachers and saying how things are different from how I'm teaching things and how other teachers don't do this, other teachers don't do that. And, you know, kids talk. So I didn't know for certain how other experiences were being had by other students in other classrooms, but I felt as though if I was in a position to be a resource to teachers so that they can begin to serve students and give rich experiences, then I would be, even more, have a greater reach, I would say, and I wouldn't just be able to provide great experiences to students in my classroom, but by being a resource to teachers, that other classrooms would have better experiences and it'll trickle down to more classrooms and more opportunities based upon just a stronger mindset to support students in whatever facet that they need to be supported. That's why I thought I would be better suited to be outside of the classroom, because I felt like I wanted to have more of a greater reach. So that was my initial reason and rationale for going in administration, period. And that was just only for that first step as being assistant principal. I didn't know the nuances of what it meant to be an assistant principal based upon my experiences with the assistant principals that I had. In a lot of ways, there was nothing that they were doing particularly that made me say, I want to be an assistant principal. It was more about what I felt students needed. And it wasn't until I moved to Georgia, where I actually saw assistant principals who had a different leadership style that made me feel like, wow, I want to be like them. I want to do the job the way they're doing the job, the job that they're doing, the way they're showing me how it's being done, it was something that made me want to be an administrator because of what they were doing within that role. And that had a lot to do with the relationship side of how they treated their teachers as well as how they interacted with students. And it made it more of a viable option more than it just being a stepping stone for a transition to support teachers. It was about the way in which the particular administrator operated that made me say, this is what it really will make me want to be in this position and make me enjoy that position. So that first step in part was to have a greater reach. And then secondly, when I got into a different environment, I was able to begin to start noticing the difference in terms of leadership styles of assistant principals that I had when I was in New York to the ones that I had in Georgia that showed me that there was a different approach, whether it be from a managerial perspective in New York. It was like just pretty much checking boxes and people coming in to make sure things are getting done, very little interaction, to making sure we are okay and asking what we need and supporting us more so from the ground up versus just from the top down. So that was what solidified my feelings about being an administrator from teacher to assistant principal.
Great. So you gave me a lot. I want to unpack some of the things that you said. So one of the things I heard you say was just that when you were teaching, you would have students come in and kind of talk about what other teachers were doing in the classroom. And it sounds like even before you became a leader, you know, within administration, you took on the leadership role as a teacher in that school, where you were finding ways to kind of help the teachers around you. You were developing a mentor program. So I think that's admirable. And the reason I bring that up is because we talk a little bit to our listeners, and we recommend, you know, for those that want to grow into leadership positions, we encourage them to kind of embrace that leadership role before they had the title. So I'm glad that you talked about that. You talked a little bit about when you got to Georgia and you witnessed other leadership styles. Talk to me about the challenges that you faced growing into a leadership role and actually getting that title.
Well, the challenge, you mean getting into the position itself to actually acquire the role of assistant principal?
Yes.
Okay. Well, honestly, it was about trying to find a way to market my ability to be an assistant principal, to be a leader, because there weren't too many opportunities that were structured roles outside of the classroom that would allow me to showcase that I could be an administrator. So it was about finding opportunities. So I spent a lot of time starting to ask questions. I started to look at the people that I would say I admired or I respected in their role and started asking them questions. After school, I'd go down and talk to them a little bit about just how their day is and if they had time to help me understand a little bit about what they do. And I was fortunate to have people who were willing to share that with me. And based upon some of the things that they told me, I got some topical level of insight as to, you know, what the job entailed or what the struggles were. And thankfully, I got a lot of good advice. So what I was fortunate enough to be able to do is I was liked enough or trusted enough to spearhead an opportunity to support a subgroup of students that were not doing well. So, well, they were considered bubble students. So they felt as though because I've had these off-the-cuff conversations or informal conversations about being in administration, they said, well, hey, you know, let's give him an opportunity to show us that he has the ability to identify a need, monitor that need, galvanize some type of support to make it happen and see the product of the results and get what other kind of support that I may need to make sure that this particular program or this particular initiative is seen through. So the biggest part of my initial struggle was, one, being recognized as someone who had the ability to be trusted to be able to go into that next level. So it was really about those side conversations and informal interactions and pretty much just sharing my perspective about a couple of things here and there, and then being willing to support and provide assistance where I believe that they may have needed help, and putting myself in their way, so to speak, to be able to do some things. And it just turned into an opportunity. And one of the biggest obstacles that I thought I had in becoming an assistant principal was that I tried to apply for this administrative internship program that they had. And I applied the first time, I didn't get it. I applied the second time, I didn't get it. And I was resigned to say that I didn't want to be in the internship program. I said, you know what, I'm not going to let this program define me. I'm going to find other ways to get the experience that I need. And when that third time came around, my principal asked me, hey, are you going to apply for this administrative internship? I said, no. I said, well, honestly, I think that the things that you guys have allowed me to do and ways in which you've kind of supported me or show me or give me opportunities, I think that'll suffice. And if it doesn't, if that's not enough, then it's just not going to be enough. So in part, I was faithful to believe that the experiences that I was being given as a classroom teacher on the side to do some supervision and to help with this initiative would be the, I guess, the opportunity to stick my foot in the, I guess, the big pool and determine what it feels like and learn from the people in the building versus to go out into this administrative internship program. So that was my obstacle. I never made it into the program, and I never got that greater system-wide experience with all these other teachers in the county. And to some degree, I felt a little bit sunken because of that. But at the same time, I felt more resolved to still make it anyway. I said, I'm still going to do my best. I'm still going to try to figure out a way to make it in front of someone that can give me an opportunity. So I would say the greatest obstacle was being patient and trusting myself to believe that I can still get the opportunity despite being in a formal program. You know, I went to school. While I was trying to get my doctorate, I went back to school and got my master's at the same time. So that was another obstacle. It was just time. And I had a small child. And so it was about trying to balance my time to be able to identify the opportunities that would be out there for me to be able to make that transition. So I interviewed 6 times in the summer for positions that weren't technically going to be available for me, but I would just using it as practice. So I just went in there and I said, you know what, I know this job is not for me because technically they're not really going to hire me, but I was going to go in there to try to prove to them that they would want to know who I was. So I used the interview opportunities that I had. I went 6 of them over the summer, and I just made a name for myself in that arena of going through interview process and pretty much trying my best to knock it out the park. And then that turned into an opportunity, a real opportunity for me to interview for a high school assistant principal position, of which by that time, the word was out that this guy is pretty good and he's pretty strong. So give him an opportunity. And that next interview that I went after is the one I got.
Awesome. So I heard a lot of really great things in your answer. It sounds like, you know, persistence was huge for you. At no point in your story did I hear that you gave up. So I think for the listeners, I think that's definitely something important to pick up on. It sounds like at one point you had a champion. You know, one of your administrators asked you if you were going to apply for that internship. And, you know, not everyone has that, but it's very important to identify that person that is going to look out for your career and ask those questions. And even when you chose not to apply for that internship, it sounds like, you know, in your answer, you talked a lot about the things that you did to solidify your brand and to build a reputation within that new school system. So I think all of those things that you did were what kind of helped you to grow into that role. What are some other traits that you felt like you had to work on or that you worked to develop in order to grow into that role?
Well, my first thought about the position was that I wanted to think about what I would want for my assistant principal to be for me. And I started out thinking about it the same way I thought about working with students. You know, when I moved from New York to Georgia, I went to a completely different culture, you know, and it was a completely different area. And it was really about listening and understanding what the culture was before I decided to just do me. And so the initial challenge was being patient enough to let the culture of the school that I was in to guide me to determine how I would respond to the needs of that school. There were the greatest challenge that I faced wasn't the parents, wasn't the students, wasn't my colleagues. It was the very people I thought I was going to help, and that were the teachers. I was initially in a scenario where it was a very managerial leadership style for the principal, and the teachers were trusted to instruct and do their jobs. And what I was seeing really wasn't what I envisioned to be something that I thought was for the best interest of students. So it was very difficult for me to have those courageous conversations with teachers as assistant principal, because I was limited in my scope and so to speak, power and authority. So the things that I thought weren't what should be, or the things that I believe needed correction, I was not given the full power to enact any change with regard to that. So it made me, it gave me a lot of frustration, to say the very least, because I thought that we weren't doing what we needed to do for the best interest of students. And I couldn't understand
why teachers would do that. I want to stop you there. We're going to take a quick break, Dr. Broadhead. But I want you to hold on to that thought, because I want you to continue that thought when we come back from break. When we come back from break, everyone, Dr. Marcus Broadhead will continue to talk about how to develop essential leadership traits. And, you know, we'll hear a little bit more about Dr. Broadhead and some of the challenges he was able to overcome. So stay tuned.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
If you're dealing with fear and anxiety, you've probably noticed that the more you fight these emotions, the stronger they seem to get. Dr. Friedemann Schaub, the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution, explains that instead of suppressing, we need to identify and resolve the deeper, subconscious root causes of fear and anxiety. His personal breakthrough program has helped thousands worldwide to overcome their emotional challenges. To learn more, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com and schedule your free consultation with Dr. Schaub now.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Be you plus live your purpose equals joy. That's the motto of Unstuck Joy with Vicki Todd. Vicki believes you were born with gifts that are meant to make the world brighter. Each show will feature an art visioning journal prompt to help you create your way to soul clarity. If you're ready to get unstuck and create more joy, this show is for you.
Tune in the first and third Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit VickiWorldArt.com.
Okay, we are back on the Higher Learners Podcast with Rudy Racine, where every first and third Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time and 12 p.m. Pacific, we discuss topics that help you sharpen your skills to get you to the next level in your career. Today, we are talking with Dr. Marcus Broadhead, and he is discussing developing essential leadership traits. So when we went to break, Dr. Broadhead was talking about when he made it to an assistant principal role in his career, and he was discussing some of the challenges that he faced as an assistant principal. So, Dr. Broadhead, talk to us a little bit more about the challenges that you were facing and how you were able to overcome them.
Well, I'd say the greatest challenge, as I mentioned a bit ago, was trying to establish myself with the teachers and trying to identify what I believed to be what was best for students. And it was a clash simply because of the leadership style of the principal at the time, where he trusted the teachers to teach, which he should, but to a fault. And what I mean by that is there were some people that didn't need to be trusted. And unfortunately, I had some particular concerns with certain teachers, and I just felt overall that there was a struggle for me to be able to communicate what I believe would be in the best interest of students versus what they believe to be what's in the best interest of students. So it was about learning how to coach different levels of teachers, even though I was brand new, to say, hey, I still have some expertise. I used to teach. I taught for 11 years. I have something that I can share with you. And it was a struggle because, of course, you know, to some degree, people believe that they were experts in their field and they weren't taken too kindly to my suggestions, so to speak.
So I'm curious about that. I know, you know, our listeners are in a variety of industries, right? So education is the industry that you're in. And I think this is a challenge faced by a lot of new leaders when they get into a new role and they inherit a team of professionals. And I think the challenge you mentioned was just that there were some of the employees that or the teachers that reported to you that were not performing at the level that you would have liked, and they weren't as open to the feedback that you were giving and the coaching that you were giving them. And, you know, as I mentioned, I think a lot of professionals deal with that when they take on a leadership position and they inherit new team members. Talk to us about, you know, what steps you took to overcome that and achieve success with the coaching process.
Well, initially, I didn't overcome it. I have to be honest with you. I didn't overcome it. I was pretty hurt and disappointed by what I was seeing. And what I decided I would do is what I couldn't take it back, though. I've already began to try to establish myself as a new leader. But what I had to do in hindsight was to say to myself, what haven't I communicated because everyone has a group, every assistant principal has a group of people to work with. So it's like, what haven't I communicated with them? What haven't I shared with them to help them understand what my expectations were? So in being green, I didn't clearly establish who I was, what my expectations were, and how I wanted to see the expectations lived out in the classroom. And because I didn't, it was a little bit too late to go back and say, oh, you know, this is what I expect out. So it was important for me to realize that, hey, I didn't provide the right space for all of the teachers that I supervised to understand what my expectations were. I made assumptions going into it that came back to bite me because my assumption was that all teachers were going to be at this level in my head, and I didn't set a clear expectation for the people that I supervised. And unfortunately, that's why it went left in terms of how I was feeling versus what I expected versus what they thought was expected. So there was no clarity of expectations or the vision that I had for my supervising or my team of teachers that I was supervising.
So I think that's a challenge, as I mentioned, that I feel like a lot of leaders in a lot of industries face. They go in and they expect the people that report to them to work hard. And oftentimes hard work is subjective, right? So one person's definition of working hard or one person's view of working hard might be different than the other. So when a teacher or a professional feels like they're working hard and their supervisor is looking at their you know, hard work and they feel like that's not hard work, the disconnect there is the expectations, right? And it sounds like in your experience, in your early experience, you realized that you hadn't set clear expectations for your team. And you took it upon yourself to kind of realize what you didn't do. I think a lot of professionals don't do that, in that they will sometimes blame the employee and focus on the employee, and they don't take some time to kind of figure out what they're doing and take a hard look at what they're doing and how they can take a different approach or modify their approach. How is that? How similar is that to what you did, Dr. Broadhead?
It was very similar. It was very important because it's reflective. You have to have a moment of reflection. Just like when I was a teacher, I had to reflect on my lessons. As an assistant principal, I had to reflect on how I was interacting with the adults in the building. And in learning that level of reflection, I definitely had to say to myself, what am I in control of? And how am I going to begin to start making shifts so that the outcomes that I want will be closer or on the mark to what I hope to be versus what I'm thinking in my head, so to speak. So it was definitely important for me to be reflective and to really be critical of what I'm doing and how I'm doing it so that I can get the best outcomes with the people, the adults I was working with. Because they don't graduate. They're there, and they're people that need to be worked with day in and day out. And I have to figure out how I'm going to work with them, how to help them to grow, and what they need more specifically so that they can do a better job or perform at their strengths.
So as we discuss, you know, just developing the essential leadership traits, we talked about being reflective. How essential would you say being reflective is to be a successful leader?
It's critical. It's paramount. Just when I transitioned into becoming a principal, a lot of the things that I do comes from reflection. It comes from sitting down, thinking things through, taking a breath, using information that I have, pouring over that information, and really taking the time to review and think through what the next step should be. It is education is a reflective process. Leadership is a reflective process because we oftentimes get caught up in the business, the busyness of the work. And by not stepping back from the busyness of the work, it just causes us just to work toward the day versus working toward the vision. So it's important to step back. And the higher you go up on the pedestal of your leadership, it makes a lot of sense metaphorically because you're actually having a greater purview of the importance of the work. And as a teacher, you're closer to the student, day-to-day grind. Assistant principal, you're a little bit above that because you're having a bigger purview of what's expected. And as principal, you have the highest purview outside of, you know, the county office, the highest purview of the expectations of the whole school and how to take all those things in consideration as you're working toward the same end, which is what's best for students.
I see. So you've been in education for several years now. You've grown into this principal role. And we're going to take another break. But when we come back from break, I'm curious to know what shaped your leadership style. So I want you to think about that question as we go on break. We are going to take, as I said, a quick break. When we come back with Dr. Marcus Broadhead, we'll continue to talk about how to develop essential leadership traits. And we'll hear how Dr. Broadhead shaped his leadership style and more. So stay tuned. We will be right back.
Tune in to Mainstream Metaphysics Radio to harness your connection with the universe to effect change for optimal success and happiness. Name one of the country's top psychics, Eve now brings her insights and gifts to this weekly hit call-in show, joined by visionaries, leaders, and gifted others, but mostly you. Jot it down, Thursdays, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
The truth is funny. Shift happens with Colette Marie Steffen is excited to welcome Karen Benton as a monthly guest host. Tune in on the third Wednesday of each month at 8 a.m. Pacific time to regain confidence and trust in your capacity to create change in your life, your health, your family, and your well-being. Karen Benton is a mother, nurse practitioner, certified body talk practitioner, Franklin Method instructor, and owner of Limitless Living LLC. For more information about Karen, visit KarenBenton.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Choose the new earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. The Cornelia Stephanie Show is your catalyst for anchoring heaven on earth on a global scale. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
So we are back on the Higher Learners Podcast with Rudy Racine, where every first and third Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time and 12 p.m. Pacific, we discuss topics to help you sharpen your skills to get you to the next level in your career. Today, we have Dr. Marcus Broadhead on our show, and he is talking to us about just developing essential leadership traits. So, Dr. Broadhead, when we went to break last, I asked you to tell me what has shaped your leadership style. So you've been in education for a while. You are now a principal, and you are in a leadership role, obviously. So talk to us about what has shaped your leadership style today.
The foundation, believe it or not, of my leadership style comes from my actual dissertation. My chair at the time told me to write a dissertation for where I want to be versus where I am. And when I started my process as a teacher, and when I was looking into where I wanted to be, was administration, ultimately. And I had a unique experience because I worked at the time at a predominantly white high school. And I experienced the fact that I was one of the only black men in the building, one of the only few black teachers in the building. And it let me think about what would that look like if I was an administrator in that same scenario, same environment. So I did some research ultimately on African-American males that work in a predominantly white schools to try to get a better understanding of, you know, what they faced and how they went about their day and what leadership styles they used to be able to move their schools forward. And I took it from this perspective of a transformative leadership model coupled with critical race theory. And the conversations that I had with those gentlemen helped me a great deal to understand just the practical sense of what they do and how they do it, and also the research in and of itself about the type of leaders African-American men were before integration and segregation, and talking about how they were community-based and how they lobbied to get support from different companies and angel donors, and different areas where they led in terms of more of a community sense rather than just be the principal. They served in more ways than one. So I was really looking at the historical context of what it meant to be a leader, and it really resonated with me to hear how important the role of principal was for African-American communities. And I said that I wanted to be that kind of leader. I wanted to be somebody who wasn't beholden to a position, but was more about influence and more about changing the lives of the community rather than being just, I'm the principal and this is my role and I have a desk and have a nice little shiny this or that on my desk. It was about leading a community. So in the back of my mind, I always said to myself, well, from the research and from what I believe in my heart of hearts, what I really want to do is I want to be a leader, a person of influence for the betterment of the community through pouring into our children. And what do I need to do to make that happen? And fortunately for me, I had a great opportunity to apply to Benison Middle School. And that was, believe it or not, was the only school that I honestly thought about wanting to be the leader of. And it worked itself out. So when I went into it, I was just trying to show them who I was. It was about me being who I am and saying, I want to be able to be me in this role. And so if you don't want me, then I don't need to be in this position, because I wanted to lead with my heart. I wanted to lead understanding that I wanted to do more for an area than for a building.
That's beautiful. So it sounds like you really embrace servant leadership and really just trying to make an impact on not only the faculty and administration, but also the students and the families that you were the principal for. So going into that role, I mean, obviously you were hired into Bennett Mill Middle School, and you had this team of faculty members, administration, and you had parents that were now, you know, coming to you as the principal, students that were referring to you as the principal. What were some of the things that you did to build the trust of the school as a leader?
Well, I would say I had a couple of things going for me. One, I never left the county that I worked in. When I first came to this particular county, I would say now 12 years ago. And so, believe it or not, my I was beginning to build a reputation for myself because I was teaching the students of the teachers that I was currently, they were currently my staff members. So I knew some of the staff members because I taught them, taught their children. So that was one piece that helped me out a lot because they knew me as an educator. They knew my interactions as a teacher. They knew my teaching style. And then I became assistant principal that feeds, the assistant principal of the high school that feeds into the middle school that I'm working in. So it's the same families. So it wasn't the parents that had elder siblings at the high school knew me from the high school, not the middle school. So it wasn't that much of a hard sell. However, it was important to me to do a couple of things. And the first thing that I did was what I did when I was a teacher. I introduced myself to the staff. I had a meeting with the entire staff, and I just talked to them about who I am as a human being. I talked to them about where I grew up. I talked to them about what my transition was to Georgia. I talked to them about my fears. I talked to them about what I hope to do. I talked to them about who I hope to be, who I plan to be, how I hope to serve them. And I just pretty much was very transparent with them. I had a similar conversation with the community. I opened the school up. I had a meeting in May, shortly after I was appointed. And the parents came in to meet me, and I talked to them and just shared with them who I was again, was as transparent as possible. After that, I think I went on the Who I Am tour and spoke as often as I could to the community. I went to elementary schools that fed into the middle school to introduce myself to the fifth graders that were going to soon be sixth graders. I spoke at the neighboring high school for the Black History Month program and just introduced myself and who I was and what I was about. And then I was, I also spoke at the baccalaureate. I was invited to be the keynote speaker at the baccalaureate for the high school, which I left. And so I pretty much exposed myself and I communicated with parents, not only in these forums, but I sent out communication with them weekly and then bi-weekly and then monthly in the form of a communication so that every time that I got an opportunity to share with them, I talked to them about where we are as a school, what my hopes were, where I would hope that they support the school. So I communicated over and over and over again with just with the parents, and then I communicated with my staff and tried to figure out who they were. And I had, like, let's say, walking conferences. So every day I go up and down the hall. I talk to every teacher on every hall. I talk to subs. I check and see how they're feeling, what's going on with them, just in case, you know, first thing in the morning, just get a pulse for how they're feeling, what's going on, just in case it's something I need to deal with or just something that they may come across. During lunch, I make myself accessible as well. So because each grade level has their own lunch period, so I'll go meet with teachers and talk with them then, just in case it's something that they don't have time to come and see me and talk with me about, I can meet them where they are. And I do a lot of follow-up classroom meetings and stuff like that. So not informally, those are things that I did. Formally, there are teams that exist in terms of leadership teams, team leaders, and other micro groups of teacher leader opportunities that we talk and we speak about different things. So in all those little groups, transparency and being consistent and talking to them about what I truly in my heart believe to be important about school. And but the first thing I think I said to them was, I didn't want to play school. I didn't want to do school. I want to really do things that matter. So I've always repeated myself in that level of transparency so they understood who I was and was very consistent about who I was and just communicated as clearly and repetitively as possible what my expectations were and who I was as a human being. My daughter goes to the school, and so that helped also for them to see me as a dad as well as the principal.
Great. So we've been talking about just essential leadership traits and building trust. And I heard you say that when you became the principal of that school, you were vulnerable. You shared your fears. You talked to them about your goals. You were transparent. You basically shared your vision for the school with your team. And I think beyond education, I think as a leader, it's imperative for any leader that goes into a role to take on that same approach. Being able to feel comfortable communicating their fears, communicating their goals, and sharing their vision, because I think that's one of the best ways to kind of get your team invested and to support you and back you, and also to hear some of their concerns and allow you to kind of work together to move your team forward. Why else do you feel trust is important, Dr. Broadhead?
Well, we're in the heart business. We work with people's children. And as a father, the hardest decision I had to make was where I was going to put my child in daycare and then what schools I was going to put my child in, because I was worried about their safety and I was worried about their education. And safety is environment. You know, the school community is a big piece of that environment. And if I can't trust that the principal has a clear vision, the principal has the values that resonate with me as a parent, then I'll be worried, because so goes the principal, so goes the school. It so goes the leader, so goes the leadership in terms of what the expectations are for the people in the building. So if I, as a parent, can't trust that the leader of the school understands that there is a standard that needs to be met, has an ability to have the pulse of what's going on at that school, can solve problems that are fundamentally concerning in terms of safety as well as academic growth and student achievement, then it makes it very difficult for me as a parent to say, hey, you could have my child for 8 hours a day and trust that my child is going to be fine and that they're going to receive the education that they need so that they can have the foundation necessary to be successful wherever they go. And so in part, as a parent, I said, what would I want? What would I want for myself? And what would I expect? So character is a big piece. So
I'm going to stop you on character. We got to take one more break, and I want to wrap things up and kind of incorporate character into the last segment. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back with Dr. Marcus Broadhead, we'll continue talking about how to develop essential leadership traits. So please stay tuned. We will be right back.
Winning at the game of money. Lynn Brown is now offering Full Spectrum Finance, a progressive 12-month program that will help you to navigate through the mechanics of financial expansion. Finally, a financial planner who looks at the full spectrum of money and abundance. Engage you in the mental, physical, and energetic aspects of finance. This is Full Spectrum Finance. Are you ready to get into it? For more information, go to fullspectrumfinance.com.
Tune in to the Psychic Professor's Show, The Voices of Spirit Radio, with international medium and spirit artist Dr. Susan Barnes on Transformation Talk Radio. Featuring a variety of spiritual topics such as psychic art, spiritualism, EVP, psychic development, and mediumship. This hit call-in show provides listeners with breakthrough wisdom to enliven and enlighten their lives. Visit spiritartgallery.net.
Tune in each Friday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio.
Tune in to Synergenetic Living Radio, where Rick and Grace Paris discuss the synergenetic way of life, what it means to truly change your perspective in life, what it means to take control of your life and manifest your true desires. For more information on Rick and Grace Paris and Synergenetic Living, check out synergeneticliving.com. Get clear on the life you desire and the current life you are creating and what is between the two. Synergenetic Living, living life loud.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days, because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
So So we're back on the Higher Learners Podcast with Rudy Racine, where every first and third Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 p.m. Pacific, we discuss topics to help you sharpen your skills to get you to the next level in your career. Today, we are talking with Dr. Marcus Broadhead about developing essential leadership traits. Just to recap what we've gotten so far, Dr. Broadhead told us that one of the essential leadership traits is that you have to be reflective. You have to be able to look back at yourself and your approach. He talked about building trust with your team, being vulnerable and sharing your goals, sharing your vision. And when we went to break, he mentioned character. So, Dr. Broadhead, you were talking a little bit about character. Tell us a little bit about why character is important.
Again, it goes back to parents feeling like they understand who you are as a person and being able to say that they're fine with who you are as a person, because you can't separate. Well, they won't separate you as a man versus you as a principal. That has to be one and the same. And if they're not receiving the right kind of ideas about you in terms of your morals and your values and what you stand firm on and the things that you are flexible on, then it makes it very difficult for them to be able to then trust you and say, you know what, this guy is our principal, and this guy, we can follow, or we can allow him to do his job because we believe that he's going to lead us in the right direction. And that level of trust comes from you presenting yourself in a way that you demonstrate the qualities of character that are reflective of positive attributes and traits that families can feel comfortable with.
Excellent. So I think all of these traits that you've defined, albeit, you know, we've talked to them within the context of education, as a leader in just about any industry, you know, being able to be reflective and looking back on the approach that you're taking with your team, taking the time to try to work on building the trust with your team and being comfortable with being vulnerable and sharing your fears and sharing your vision, all are extremely important. And you talked about just knowing what your values are as well when you touched on character. What are some other takeaways that you feel like our listeners, whether they be in the education industry or in any industry, what are some other takeaways that you feel like they need to take with them in their profession as they're trying to grow in leadership?
Well, I would say that I learned very quickly that it's not about me. Even though I'm in the position of leader, ultimately, it's not about me. I need to recognize that I represent something bigger. I'm pushing for something bigger and greater than I am. And it's not about how I personally feel about anything. It's about what's the big picture. And a lot of times people get caught up in the position and they're so busy being the principal that they're losing their principles. And they're losing their way in a manner in which they're not effective and they're not really helping anyone. So understanding it's not about me. The greatest thing that I also connected with was recognizing that education is a business, but it's a different kind of business. Again, as I told you before, it's a heart business, and it has everything to do with our attitude. And our attitude toward who we serve drives how we serve. So that is probably the two greatest things that I can share with you with regard to what I believe is important for you to understand as a leader.
So you said your attitude towards who you serve. Finish that quote for me.
Drives how we serve them.
Drives how we serve them. Your attitude towards who we serve drives how we serve them. And I think that's key for any leader in any role. Your attitude towards who you serve drives how you serve them. And I think the point that you made, Dr. Broadhead, about it just not being about you, it's bigger than just you. I think a lot of us leaders, when in those roles, sometimes our ego gets in the way. So I really appreciate you sharing that last point with us. I really want to thank you, Dr. Broadhead. We're getting to the end of the show, and I want to give you an opportunity to tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you if they want to learn more about what you do, if they ever want you to come speak to their faculty or speak to their organization. So how does one get in contact with Dr. Marcus Broadhead?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. I could be found on LinkedIn at Marcus Broadhead, B R-O-A-D as in dog, H-E-A-D. My email address, if you want to book me for any speaking engagements, I definitely have a great time speaking with students as well as speaking with aspiring leaders and teachers as well to help them to kind of think about what they need to do and help them to refocus. And I can be found at Broadhead, B as in boy, R-O-A-D in dog, H-E-A-D, Broadhead.Marcus, M-A-R-C-U-S, at gmail.com. So broadhead.marcus@gmail.com. Feel free to send me an email directly. I will return it. And also, you can follow me on LinkedIn, and you could see my daily motivational activities at school as well as anything else that I'm up to.
Excellent. Excellent. Dr. Broadhead, once again, thank you so much for joining us today on the Higher Learners Podcast. For those of you that are listening for the first time, you can join us on Higher Learners Podcast every first and third Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific. Feel free to like us at Higher Learners on Facebook. Higher Learners is spelled H-I-R-E, Learners. That's L-E-A-R-N-E-R-S. Follow us on Instagram at Higher Learners. You can reach me on LinkedIn as well at Rudy Racine. That's R-U-D-Y-R-A-C-I-N-E. Continue to lead. Continue to be great. You can, you will, you must excel. Have a great day, everyone.
You've been listening to the Higher Learners Career and Leadership Series, defining success and putting minds to work with Rudy Racine. Rudy will help you craft your personal definition of success, offering support and guidance as you move forward towards your goals. Take the leap. With the right mix of focus and motivation, anything can be achieved. To learn more, tune in every first and third Monday, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. To download this podcast and for more information on Rudy Racine and Higher Learners, visit Rudy's site at higherlearners.com. That's H-I-R-E learners.com.